Hello and welcome, fellow investors, to the latest Buy, Hold, Sell podcast brought to you by LiveWire Markets. I'm your host, Vishal Tekshinani. Please excuse me for the reduced sound quality in this episode. Like many of you, I'm self-isolating at home, and I'm having to make do with what equipment I have access to. But even still, I hope you'll enjoy this episode, and especially more, I hope you've been well. The past few weeks have been extremely painful for many investors, with markets off some 30%, trillions shaved off asset prices and super balances, and the unfortunate loss of jobs across many sections of society due to the lockdowns, and that's on top of the health and human effects of this pandemic. In this discussion, we'll address some of the common questions that investors are asking right now, including what's next for markets and what to do with your portfolio in this environment. We'll be joined by a duo of very interesting and experienced fund managers. Steve Johnson of Forager Funds, whom some of you may be familiar with as he built the recession-proof, property-proof ASX portfolio for LiveWire subscribers. Steve's approach is to invest in unloved bargains that have both asset backing and earnings power. Our second fundie is Ben McGarry of Totus Capital, a long-short manager. In his last monthly report, Ben said the team at Totus were the most optimistic they've been in recent years, given his portfolio is benefiting on the short side from falling markets, while valuations are becoming more attractive on the long end. I hope this extended interview gives you some insights in how to manage this period financially, and most importantly, I hope that you stay healthy. I'll now hand it over to my co-host, James Marley. Please bear in mind that this episode was recorded on the 25th of March, 2020. I hope you enjoy listening to it, and if you did, please subscribe to our channel, and I hope you have a great day.
Hello and welcome to this LiveWire thematic discussion brought to you by LiveWire Markets. My name is James Marley. I'm the co-founder at LiveWire Markets. And in this quite different and unique time, I'm joined by Ben McGarry from Totus Capital and Steve Johnson from Forager Funds, and two gentlemen joined me via a hookup on Zoom. We're obviously respecting all of the health recommendations, keeping our distance. But we know for a lot of investors, it's a really difficult time, probably looking at big losses in your portfolio. And if our two guests today can help ease some of that anxiety around investing, well, I think that's a good thing. So we're going to push on with the show. Ben and Steve, thanks very much for getting involved.
We might add to it, James. Who knows?
I hope not.
It's good to see you. Hi, everyone.
Steve, well, let's just start from the top. What's your sense on the current situation? How have you been assessing? It's been obviously really dynamic, lots of new news flow. What's your current assessment on state of play?
It's bad. The economic impacts of what's happening out there are going to be very, very significant and very extreme. I think from a finance and stock market perspective, we've gone from trying to incorporate that environment into forecasts around profitability and what's going to happen to the business to some fairly systemic across the market selling and a bit of dysfunction, not just in equity markets, but across bond markets and derivatives and all sorts of different places that you're seeing show up in fairly wild gyrations that are becoming, I think, less and less anchored to what's actually happening in the real economy.
That's the really hard part to get your sort of a sense on, and conversations I've been having have really been around trying to assess if the market pricing has any better sense on what the economic impact is going to be from this, and is the 35% or 30 to 35% move that we've seen in equities, has that, you know, has it been efficient in pricing the disruption that's going to happen to businesses?
Well, I think if you take that question, though, and you actually turn it into the fundamental question, is the whole of corporate Australia worth 35% less than it was a month ago? Maybe you could argue that the equity prices a month ago were wrong, but I think wiping 35% off all of the future profits that corporate Australia is going to make because of something that is probably going to be a really bad 6 months to a year is extreme. If you sat down and did a discounted cash flow model and said, I'm going to take this next year's profit and dividends out of it, you're probably going to adjust your valuations by 5 to 10. Now, there are long-term consequences here, and there are some businesses affected a lot more than others, but I think saying that the whole of corporate Australia is worth 35% less than it was a month ago because of what we're seeing out there in the real world is particularly extreme. And I think people, they tend to over-extrapolate at the top and they tend to over-extrapolate at the bottom. We have some advantages in this country in terms of the disease's progression so far. We're an island, so we can protect the borders better than most. We have a government that has the balance sheet capacity to do very, very significant things here to try and rescue it. So it's not all doom and gloom from my perspective. And I feel like, I'm not saying that the 35 can't become 50. You know, we've seen plenty of market pullbacks that are 50%, but I think you will look back in a few years' time and say 35% was an overreaction to the economic impact this is going to have.
Ben, I'll bring you in here. That's assessment from Steve, bad short term, but we know markets price things or move very quickly and can overshoot. What's your assessment on where we stand today?
Yeah, I 100% agree it's bad. Don't necessarily agree that 35% is, you know, an overreaction short term, because what we've got to do here is find the clearing price for equity investors to step up and recapitalise, you know, a good chunk of the Aussie equity market. And given the damage that's been done short term, you really got to put attractive deals on the table for people to want to step up and recapitalise and step into stocks that perhaps came into this with too much debt or large fixed cost bases. Nobody saw this coming, but we're seeing today a raising from Cochlear at a company that, you know, pro forma or prior to this month didn't have a lot of debt on the balance sheet, and they're having to raise at a 17% discount to the last traded price on a share price that had already been smashed. So it tells you that other companies that are in a lot worse shape are going to have to do some pretty drastic things to get through this period of turbulence. So I think we've had a very short, sharp fall, but I don't think we've played out anywhere near enough in terms of time. So I think we're going to get volatility, and over time, as people, these companies start to recapitalize and people get more comfortable with what the stimulus and the positives are on the other side of the negatives, you know, we'll see a base form over the next few months. So I'm also think it's a big opportunity over the next few years. There's big dislocations, but I'm unsure that 35% has it all priced in short term.
Ben, just staying with you, there's been a few trading sessions where we've seen, after a couple of days of consecutive falls, we've seen the market try and rally, and there have been some sensational individual stock movements. I think last week we saw CIMIC rally 50 or 60% in a day, Afterpay plus 50% in a day. So we're seeing that extreme volatility. Do you feel like, you know, from that reaction, we're seeing that people are trying to step in and pick the bottom, and they're probably pulling the trigger a bit earlier in your perspective?
Almost the opposite. I mean, I think it's classic bear market behavior, and the stocks that are up most significantly on these bounce days are some of the ones that were facing challenges or not really profitable or generating decent cash flow even prior to, you know, this virus environment we found ourselves in. So I think you'd be very careful buying those companies that were using things like factoring of receivables and payables to flatter cash flows that have reasonable debt levels, that were having problems on projects, you know, even prior to this virus situation, or something like an Afterpay, which we can talk about later, which has got challenges and is also very capital intensive in terms of its business model. It's one of the sharpest bounces today, but I'd caution people to just be careful about those bounces short term.
Great. Steve, I'm going to pick up on a question that I kind of stole from you, because I thought it was a great one that you gave me last week. And I do, when we interview investors, they often talk about moments or periods in time where they witness extreme behavior and anecdotes. And I've asked you to both bring along a couple of the crazy things that you've seen take place in markets that you think suggest that there's some irrational behaviour taking place. Steve, what are some of the crazy things that you've seen taking place?
Yeah, it's not always irrational just because it's crazy, right? I think someone that is a forced seller is not being irrational about it. They're just in a situation where they have to sell stocks. And you're seeing super funds across the board now where people are jumping online changing their asset allocation from balanced or aggressive to cash, and that underlying super fund then has to go out and reallocate their portfolio. And really, the only liquid assets that they've got that are in the aggressive strategy are listed equities. So you're seeing that, you're seeing dysfunction in bond markets, but it's not necessarily that the person on the other side of that is stupid. They're often in these situations, in a situation where they're forced to sell. Look, I would say the most extreme things in my portfolio are the things that I think are largely unaffected by what's happening. You know, we own Macmahon, which is a mining contractor in our Aussie fund portfolio. It's got five big contracts that are all long-term, really low-cost mines. Hasn't seen any disruption in terms of being able to operate those mines at the moment. And, you know, they're fairly remote. The ability to quarantine some of those sites is much easier than it is to quarantine a big city. And I've seen the share price of that business halve. You know, it's profitable. It doesn't need cash or debt. It's a very conservatively geared balance sheet, and the share price is down by half. So I think there's extremities there. I feel like some of the stuff that is directly exposed, it's very directional, the behavior. This thing is in tourism. I don't want to own it, and I'm going to sell it irrespective of what the price is. So I completely understand it. I think the argument is right that this business is going to struggle a lot. And you may not want to own it, but there's very little discussion around what the right price is for that business. And I think to Ben's point, you're going to see a lot of recapitalization. So why would you put money in at $5 for Webjet if you're going to be able to put it into a recapitalization here at whatever they're going to raise that money at over the next couple of days? So, you know, I think you're seeing some extremities. For me, there's not a lot of liquidity at some of the small end where we operate. So you see some crazy stuff, but we can't buy enough shares to make any difference. And, you know, we've got something like Experience Co today that's up 60% on $10,000 or $15,000 worth of shares traded. So it's the information is sort of irrelevant, right? It is a tiny number of people that are selling something to someone else, and the fact that they're selling it at the low price to start with and then the high price largely means nothing for me.
Mm-hmm. Ben, is there anything that's caught your eye as being, kind of wild and wacky and out there in terms of the market transactions and the behaviour that you're seeing?
Yeah, look, I agree with Steve that there's some things that are getting carted out regardless of fundamentals, and I think people are just using the playbook of 10 years ago and following that almost blindly. One thing we learned, you know, in the financial crisis was stay close to your companies, because some things are going to get belted that are actually not impacted, and that creates some of the biggest opportunities coming out of things. So, yeah, stocks like Credit Corp, which were destroyed in the financial crisis, came in with bad book of debts they were trying to collect prior to the financial crisis, had a bad balance sheet as well leading into it. You know, this is a company that raised money at $30, you know, well ahead of any sign of turbulence in the market, and has got down into, sub $10 level. There's director buying. So there's some opportunities there. NRW is one in the mining space that, you know, got absolutely destroyed in the financial crisis, is in the process of, repeating history here. But, you know, the iron ore space, iron ore prices holding in well, Aussie dollars come off a lot. The miners are still spending. So there's some opportunities there. The really crazy stuff, I think, has been at, you know, leadership level from politicians, and, you know, two of the people I think that have got the most to lose were the most dismissive about this coming, you know, virus impact. And they're Donald Trump and Elon Musk. Both said, you know, dismissed the virus out of hand early on. Both have incredibly cyclical fixed cost businesses and stand to lose the most from the economic downturn that and so, you know, may well have had a head in the sand in terms of their reaction to this crisis.
Ben, I know you follow Elon quite closely. I believe he's working on a vaccine for coronavirus too. Is that correct?
Yeah, I just want to make sure we get the GM or Ford vaccine rather than the Tesla vaccine.
I don't know if this is the place for it, James, but I do think that concept that everyone replays the previous crisis. Yeah, everyone was, I think, on the way up worried about exactly the same things that caused the previous crisis, and that's why you get blindsided by something that's completely different. But I do think, I mean, you've had the government and the Reserve Bank move very, very quickly here to provide funding through the banking system. You've got a bank sector that's much, much better capitalized than it was going into the financial crisis. And I don't think that there is a lot of logic in sending a robust, sustainable business bust because of something that is probably going to last 3 months or 6 months. So I'm probably more worried about working capital unwind and those cash flow situations than I am about access to bank funding, as long as that bank funding is a perfectly reasonable amount for the business in normal circumstances. And I think you'll see that play out, say, through the retail sector. I mean, Unibail or Westfield is not going to send all of its retailers bust because they can't pay their rent, because if they open the shopping center in 6 months' time, there's going to be nobody there for their clients to go and shop at. So why would you send all of your clients bust? Their cost of funding is extremely low. Why would the banks want to pull the pin on a Unibail Redemco? And you can capitalize the interest here at something like 3%, you know, over the next 12 months and come out of the other side of it with a balance sheet that is manageable as well. So I think you'll see more rational behavior this time around than you saw through the financial crisis, because in the financial crisis, the financial players were in no capacity to be lending money to anyone. They were trying to shrink their own balance sheets and trying to deal with their own very significant issues. And I do think it's a different setup this time around.
We've seen overnight the US market had a big 11% rally. Clearly, participants over there thought they saw something which was going to help them get to the other side. That rally hasn't flowed through, or it's lost steam in the Australian market today. We're recording on a Wednesday. I'm interested to hear from the two of you, are there any particular markers, you know, that you're looking for or watching to that would be an indication that there is, you know, I guess a clear path to the other side of the situation we're in at the moment?
Yeah, the recapitalizations are the obvious one, where you're getting you know, them well supported and people starting to make money out of the raisings from companies. I think that's the major one to look out for. But also, you know, the end of the buy the dip mentality. I think, you know, where by the time this is through, there's not going to be many sort of dip buyers left, and you want to be the one standing, you know, with the highest quality book of, you know, strong companies to come out of this, you know, at the end of it. So don't, you know, spend all your bullets. And we haven't really seen any, you know, mega corporate failures yet. We're only just starting to see the start of these capital raisings. So I think we've got a way to go. You know, every cycle you'll see some of the, you know, poster childs blow up, the Enrons, the WorldComs. You know, in Australia we had Babcock, Allco, ABC Learning last cycle. We've yet to see those sort of play out this cycle, and suspect we'll see them.
Ben, can I ask you, on the capital raising front, is the phone ringing from the investment banks sounding you out to sense your appetite for participating in capital raisings?
No, I don't think they're look, you know, we're a long short fund. The long shorts tend to be towards the bottom of the list, so they're not desperate yet. So we haven't had our phone ringing off the hook. But I think, you know, there'll come a point. The companies that are further down the queue won't be able to be picky about who their investors are. And we've certainly got a lot of dry powder to, you know, invest in recapitalizations in real businesses, you know, with medium-term tailwinds. So we very much, you know, plan to be active in the recapitalizations over the next few months.
The one thing that I know is that by the time that you know this is over, you aren't going to be buying stocks super cheaply anymore. So, you know, the way this plays out is it goes up 10 and then it goes down 10 and you have five of these dead cat bounces, and then it goes up 10 one day and everyone says, well, that's another dead cat bounce, and then it goes up another 10. And, you know, by the time you have certainty here around what the future looks like, you're not going to be buying stocks at super cheap prices. So I think you've got to be careful about thinking you can. I have nothing against a strategy that says I'm conservative and I don't want to lose money and I'm going to sit and wait this out, but thinking you get to have your cake and eat it too, that you get to see certainty here and still buy stocks cheap, you're not going to get that opportunity. I think on the economic side of things, I mean, the playbook is already in front of us. You have seen China, you've seen South Korea go through this. You know, we own Yum China, which owns all the KFC restaurants in China in our international portfolio. An announcement out yesterday, they're back to 95% of their KFC stores open in China. They're roughly 20% down year on year in terms of sales. You're seeing traffic jams again in China. Like, that economy it's not anywhere near 100%, but cracked down really, really hard, and you can start getting back to work, you know, in that 6 to 8 week period is not out of the question. And like I said before, we're on the cusp here of crazy exponential growth and person-to-person transmission of this disease, but I still think that there is some chance. I'm not running my portfolio assuming that it's the case, but there's some chance that in 3 and 4 weeks' time, you're seeing declining cases here in Australia and people can see that there is an end to this. Again, I'm not betting the farm that that is happening, but I think you've got some playbooks in front of you in other countries that it works. And I went out for a short run before this and the city is completely and utterly dead and everyone that's running past each other is the only person I went anywhere near. We tried to run around each other on the same side and almost ran straight into each other. So I think people have finally got the message. It's been incredibly frustrating. I think for those of us in financial markets that are reading the news overseas very regularly, it's been incredibly frustrating that people have not been taking this seriously because it is something that you can fix. It is something you can get on top of. And I think there's a huge economic incentive out there for cheaper, widespread testing for medical solutions that are going to help with this problem. And I think you'll be surprised 3 and 4 months down the track here how much we've been able to adapt to a very different environment. It's going to be different for a very long period of time, but I think if we do it properly as a country, we can be starting to get back to work sooner than is being anticipated at the moment. Perhaps wildly optimistic, but we'll see.
Alrighty. Ben and Steve, I'm going to put one question that we'll wrap it up on, and I'll get both of you to have a dip in it. So, Ben, I'll give it to you first. Can you give me a sense of how you have any particular changes you have made to the portfolio? So how are you positioned today and how you might expect that to change over the weeks and months ahead? Rationale for those changes and maybe a couple of stock ideas, maybe one or two you like, one or two that you think you want to avoid. Just give me a sense of how you're investing.
Yeah, look, we've pretty much been playing it to the financial crisis GFC playbook. So be very careful about financial services leveraged stocks, stocks with balance sheet leverage and operational leverage. In this environment, I think we've steered clear of. We're looking, there are some winners. In our office, the dash to work from home, we've bought a bunch of Microsoft services. People are using a lot more data. The cloud is, an essential part of people's businesses. So businesses like Microsoft, we've been adding to gradually on the fall. It's well held, but, a great business that I think will come out of this, really well. Amazon, our largest stock, it's held in so well that we've actually started to sell some to roll into things that are down more. And then the likes of Visa and MasterCard, are getting smashed. They're well held, but this just accelerates that move away from cash to card and online spending, which I think they're big beneficiaries of in the long run. So there's definitely some winners and losers, but I would be very careful about leverage stocks. Buy now, pay later, I would be careful of companies that are very reliant on external capital to fund their business models.
Steve?
Yeah, we are long only, and in our Australian fund, it's a fairly concentrated fund of lots of small and illiquid businesses. So the market prices of those companies have been smashed pretty much across the board. So there's less ability for us to do anything dramatic in terms of changing the portfolio because you're selling something that's halved to buy something else that's halved in most cases. And, we know those businesses pretty well and we're in touch with the management teams and are confident in most cases that they're going to come out of the other side of this and that the valuation hasn't changed dramatically. So, we've been trying to top up on those that we think are most attractively priced. We've been taking money off the table on almost similar to Ben's Amazon point there, some of the stuff that held up really well, at least in the early days. McMahon was one for us that 2 weeks into this was still trading near its highs and there was volume in the stock. So it's one of my favorite ideas at these prices, but we took a fair bit of money off the table at the peak. And we've done a lot more of that in our international fund. We've been fairly underweight the US for most of the past 2 years, really. And we've seen some really high quality businesses in that market that are probably exposed to this, but, lots of big net cash balances on the balance sheet and businesses that you want to own over a long period of time that have been expensive for a long time that are trading at pretty attractive prices. So I think the aim for us is, yes, cheaper, but also better quality businesses in this environment that you buy something for 50 cents in the dollar and sell it for a dollar 12 months later, you pay tax, you've got to find something else to do with the money. If you can buy a high quality business at 50 cents in the dollar here and hold it for the next 10 years, they compound your wealth for you. You don't have to sell it and pay the tax. And I think you get better long-term outcomes out of thinking about what's the ideal portfolio for this rather than sort of jumping at shadows and chasing every single opportunity that comes along.
So staying with the high quality.
I wouldn't say our Aussie fund started with high quality. So make a bit of a shift there.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, listen, gents, thanks very much for that. Appreciate you taking the time to talk through how you're investing in this environment, and we'll get you onto a few shows of Buy, Hold, Sell.